Hello, my name is Travarsi, and you are listening to Transduction Signal on DubLab Radio. This is my premiere show. I'm very excited to be here. And just to give you a quick background about what the show, the rundown, what it's going to be about, basically, I'd like to have a feature guest, and there'll be a live performance. We'll talk about what it is that the guest is using and what they have in their case. And then we'll get into their musical journey and talk about their background and how they got into performing live and what they are doing now today. So, being that this is my first show, I am honored to have a friend, amazing producer, live performer in the as my guest today. His name is David Castellani. He's a producer, live performer, as I said. He's the founder of the techno imprint Noetic. He's also the co-founder and developer of Anticulture, which is a module company. We'll get into that. And he's originally from Italy, but now based in LA. And it's great to have him here. So hi, David. Welcome. Welcome to Transduction Signal.
Hi, Farsi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel honored to be able to be part of this debut episode here.
Cool. Well, I guess like I have so many questions for you, but I think that before we dive into all of that, let's play your performance so people can get a little taste of you and your music before we get into all that. All right.
Thank you.
right. That was amazing. I really enjoyed it. Like, I really, truly did enjoy that performance. Like, I always enjoy your live performances. Wow. Like, can you walk us, before we get into everything, can you kind of walk us through what was happening? Just for those listeners out there, like, tell us about how you were creating all those textures and what you were using in your life setting. Give them a good visualization of what was going on there.
Yeah, thanks. So it's actually kind of a new setup for me. I have been performing mainly around the California area with the live modular stuff in the last few years. And I've really just been bringing up a really big rig. You just kind of wherever I can, like, put it in my car and bring it to. But now that I'm starting to play outside of California and needing to travel more, I've had to find solutions for a smaller setup. And this is what I've been able to wrangle together in the last 6 months or so. And really what it consists of, it's two sub-modular cases. Alongside, I have a DB01, which is the bass synthesizer from Erica Synths. And then I'm also using my sequencer, which is the Precision Disruptor by Anti-Culture, for the DB1. And then I also have the Zen Delay by Ninja Tune that's running through that chain. So that's really kind of the only external thing, was the DB1 that I wanted to have on the side. But then the rest of it is all coming out of the case. And it's really mainly a lot of noise engineering voices. I pretty much have all the voices that you could think of up there. There's about seven or so, a couple are even actually doubled up, but the Terraxic Teratus, the Basimilus.
Yeah, I know. They're always a mouthful, right? The Basilimus Iteratus Alter.
Yeah. The Loquelica Teratus.
Don't feel bad. I had to practice that a while before
I'm so sorry. You know, if any of the guys from Noise Engineering are listening, or girls, I feel bad for you. I apologize ahead of time. So
they always use, like, letters, I think, you know, like they say the BIA, right, or the LIP.
I should have done that to begin with instead of sounding like I'm swallowing my words. But yeah, so I have a lot of those going on. And then I also have a Pico voice that's in there as well. And that's pretty much handling all the voices. Then as far as sequencing goes, I have two circadian rhythms, which are going into the Busy Circuits samplers, and then I have a the 512 vector sequencer, which I'm also really, really new to, that I've just started using. Which has been really, really great. So it's a really, really deep sequencer, and it's been a journey, like, getting my brain into that. I really do think it's one of the most developed sequencers that's out there, as far as, like, all encompassing, can do so many different things. So and then what I do is I actually run all the channels individually out into, I do have Ableton that is open. Ableton's not actually running, so the playback isn't going, and I'm not sending any information from the computer to the rig, but I am running each individual channel through a separate channel in Ableton, where then I'm compressing, EQing, sidechaining, and doing all the traditional stuff that you would do when you were sitting down in front of, like, a regular DAW to create a track.
So you like, on each track you have, like, a chain, and are you recording it, like, stems as well, or you just, this is live?
Yeah,
you're running it through those channels.
Correct. Yeah. I don't run the computer, mainly because I try not to stress the computer, the least amount as possible. Having a computer is always such a gamble, because something messes up with the sound card or whatever, it's something that I really I'm, dreading the day that something like that happens. And, of course, the solution would be to remove the computer altogether. But what I do have, short of the fact that, like, for instance, each channel has an EQ, a dedicated EQ to it. I also have two Fader Fox controllers, which you see me kind of turning to the right sometimes during the performance. And those Fader Fox controllers are what I use to control extra filters that are on each channel that are in Ableton. Okay. And I'm also using the effect sends. So I have three sends that I'm using. So an added reverb, an added delay, and that allows me to kind of, like, have extra effects, have extra EQing, have compression, have just a little bit more control over tightening all the sounds up and making everything fit within its pocket properly. But again, it's all just kind of a live protocol, open kind of, you know, channel that, that everything goes through without having to actually play or record or send any information to the system.
Got it. You're just using it to pass and process audio through it.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
There was a question somebody had submitted, and they were asking about your, like, any side chaining or sort of like a low end control. What's going on with there?
Yeah, that's actually, and you're right. Thanks for bringing that up. I actually did forget. I do have another oscillator from Erica in there, which is the Wavetable oscillator, which is also a really, really powerful oscillator. And the way that I do my bass is kind of this new thing that I fell into the last few months. Essentially, I'll have the Mimitec Digitalis from Noise Engineering that's spitting, you know, four different, you know, CV patterns out. I run those through the A135 Dofer CV mixer. So now I have four channels of incoming CV, and I have four knobs, which allow me to attenuate the volumes of each one. Then I just take one, you know, multiplied or one one output from those four mixed together. One mixed output goes into a quantizer to fit it into a scale, and then I'll just use that to be my main pitch for my oscillator. And in the meantime, I'm sending 16 steps out of the circadian rhythms to go ahead and trigger the rhythm of the bass. So what this allows me to do is allows me to kind of have these four knobs. And as I turn the four knobs and I mix the different incoming CVs, I can constantly change the basses into new, weird, cool grooves. And I can take some of the steps out, some of the triggers out from the circadian rhythms to get different rhythms. And it just is a really kind of compact and fun way to be able to get a lot of different bass variations with a smaller HP. So it's been working really well for me. Then on top of that, then yes, then I also have that processing then going. So that's going through its own channel. And then I am, I'm using a plugin called Track Spacer, which is, it's kind of like a frequency-based side-chaining software plugin that's really, really fabulous. So if anyone doesn't have experience.
What's it called again? Say it again. Track Spacer?
Yeah, Track Spacer. I think the company is called Wave Alchemy. But I could be wrong. But essentially, it is, you know, just like any traditional side chaining where you get, you know, a duct signal from an incoming outside source. It's the same thing. But what it does is it only ducts the incoming frequencies. So it's kind of like a dynamic EQ type thing that has an outside source that will help you turn the volume up and down. And what that does is allows you to give that freedom for the kick to have more space, but it still isn't completely ducking all the bass out completely and leaving some space out there to help it keep it full. And then I'm also then grouping my kicks and my basses together, and then I'm using just the stock bus compressor.
To kind of give it a little...
Yeah, just a little gel,
glue it together a little bit.
Yeah. And that's really kind of how I get my basses going, and so far it's working really well for me.
Nice. So, so let me ask you this then. Now, being, you know, a live performer, and I know you'd mentioned that this is your new, like your new travel setup, right? With the two submodular cases. So, for those who aren't familiar with the submodular, they're, essentially 6 HP, 104 HP, 6U, right? Okay. And, for those who are not big modular people, imagine like a little bit wider than a briefcase sort of situation, just to kind of give people some visual there. So you carry two of those, and then your computer and a sound card, your fader, Fox controllers, and then you had the additional. Now, I have some more questions about your setup, but have you found that Are you given enough time to set up and to sound check? Do you find that sometimes that's a struggle? Like, how do you feel about that?
So of course, you know, anytime you're playing live and the more stuff you're bringing, you're always creating it harder for yourself and creating it harder for the promoters and for the venue to be able to accommodate anything that you may need. of course, you know, have doing anything short of, you know, bringing a USB drive is going to take more time and more effort, more space that's going to be needed. But I got to say, compared to like before when I was using the bigger rig, you know, that I needed at least 2 hours of setup time. And that, you know, and then I needed like good, like 20 minutes of sound check. And there's so many cables and so much stuff to do. Now what's cool about the submodular.
It was like your wall unit, right? It was the big Dofer.
Yeah.
You had three like, of those, right?
Or yeah. Two, it's two like the, big. It's three cases. Yeah. It's like the bottom is on like a smaller one. It's just like the 6HP one. And then there's just two big ones on top.
Right.
Which is a lot of fun, you know, honestly. I come from like a band background, you know, so I was used to being in bands where it was like a 6-piece band where we'd have to haul, like, you know, you have to show up like 5 hours before, and there's even a lot of times we're bringing our own PAs and everything, you know, so I'm kind of used to that. So to me, it's not so much of a hassle. Of course, now it also depends how often you're touring, you know, if you're playing every single night, then that's a different story. But so compared to this, now it's much faster because the submodular cases, they do have some, they have like, you essentially you can fold them and kind of close them on top of each other. They have these like carbon fiber kind of like, you know, spacers.
Oh, the little panels, right? Like on
yeah.
the side?
Yeah, and it just closes up. It doesn't have a hinge on it like, you know, some other cases do. But it does close. And the reason I went with those also is because they're really shallow. And even though that can be a little bit messy, depending on what modules overall, I've been able to make it work. And what I can do now is I can just take that case and I can put it in a Pelican travel checked luggage case. So I just have one Pelican case and I just throw it in there, close it, and I can check the bag instead of having to carry it on board with me, which would probably be a better idea anyway. But to be honest with you, I just wanted to be able to neatly put everything in a box and let it go, you know, so...
Right.
So that's what I've found.
It's traveling easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to remove as much stuff as I can from it. And to be honest with you now, I, you know, it's silly because, you know, a lot of people, you can bring out an Octatrack and have, you know, plenty of noise to be able to perform. Coming to this decision of deciding like how much stuff you want to bring and don't want to bring is so personal and everyone kind of does a different way. I am, you know, considering ditching you know, the extra synth box, because like I mentioned now, I had brought the DB01, and then maybe eventually, you know, getting more filters and more effects and just having two of the submodular setups. So four submodular cases that you can just open up and just like kind of go like that. But we'll see if that happens.
Gotcha. Did you say four?
Yeah, four, because two is one, kind of, you know, that opens essentially. So it's, but it's four.
Right, so then you have the two. Got it. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing how your travel, like your live setup evolves. So, okay. So I want to, well, I have more questions about your setup, but I think first I want to hear a little bit about your background, because I know you live in LA now. And as I mentioned, you're Italian. Can you give us a little bit of background on how you got from Italy to LA? Because that's quite a, those are quite some leaps. So just so people can kind of follow your path and everything.
Yeah, sure. So I was originally born in a city called Genova, which is on the west coast, on the water of Italy. It's like the northwest coast. Kind of, if you imagine the Italian boot, where it kind of like creeps up at the top. So it's just right on the side, kind of like over here. I lived there for about a few years. And then after that, I moved to Milan, which is, so my father was from Genova, my mother was from Milan. So I spent a little time in Genova, spent a little time in Milan. But my father was a big America fan. His mom was an English teacher in Italy. She sent my father to do a foreign exchange year in high school here in California. So he fell in love with America and the American dream. And then, you know, as he got into his job and his work and, you know, eventually got married, had me, he found a way to have his work transfer us over to the U.S. So between the ages of 5 and 10, I started traveling back and forth until eventually we were solidly over in the U.S. We had originally gotten to Ohio. We were in Ohio for about a year. It's a really small transient time. I remember sitting on, like, we didn't even have furniture. We had, like, gotten some apartment, and, like, I was sitting, like, on the carpet on the ground. We didn't have furniture. We just had a TV, and I was watching Sesame Street for the first time. And I remember, like, learning English watching Sesame Street.
That's cute. Is it only you now? Do you have any siblings? Are you only child?
Yeah, it's just me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your parents.
Cool. Me and my parents. And then we quickly moved over to Chicago, where I lived for most of my life and spent, you know, all my, you know, kind of like older grade school and high school. And then even, you know, after high school and until about 5 years ago, where me and my girlfriend Brittany moved out here to California. And we came out here due to some family stuff. We had some family obligations that were out here. So we kind of picked up and came here. Spent about a year here taking care of the family stuff that we needed to do. And then after that happened, or that kind of, you know, finished, we just decided to stay in California. And we're happy to be here, you know, because it's a great lifestyle here, so.
Yes, I agree. And in terms of, like, the music scene, so now you're coming from, you've basically, you know, like, as you said, you've grown up in Chicago and you were in the music scene there. You mentioned playing in bands. I know that you DJed. First of all, what do you think of the music scenes, like, comparatively, and being a live artist now, how did you make that transition? Because sure. I think they're kind of simultaneous, right? Like, between the two locations. But,
yeah, kind of all happened at the same time. Well, first, to address the question about the scenes, you know, Chicago is a really amazing city, and I can't give it enough props. And there are so many wonderful, wonderful people there. A lot of people that are really in love with music and that are doing really amazing musical things. The history of Chicago, of course, as most of us know, you know, with the history of house music and just the roots.
That's where I grew up.
You know, or even the blues.
I grew up in Wisconsin, but that was like our scene. We had to go out in one of two places. It was Chicago, or people went to Milwaukee or Detroit. You know, those are the three hubs of where we did all our dancing.
And so Chicago's really rich. You know, that history is there. And not only, but it's a beautiful city. You know, it's kept really, really well. Of course, it has its issues. One being that I got to say that the city, unfortunately, has put a bit of a stranglehold on the underground dance music scene there. The authorities and the you know, local government in Chicago just really does not want to give the freedom to let underground scenes like you know, the techno scene to really have a chance to flourish as much as it needs. And it's really sad because that's, you know, this is a scene that is really special for so many people. And I got to say, out of all the party scenes that you could find, you know, between like the traditional top 40 clubbing scene or, you know, the EDM scene or whatever, I would think that the house and techno scene is some of the more responsible and some of the people that I think were really most passionate about this music. You know, it's not just about going out and, you know, intoxicated and whatever. So that's really sad, especially with its history. But unfortunately, you know, the city is on a tight leash, and that's just kind of how it is, you know, short of the few clubs that are still doing their thing. Most of the places there are really, really tough. Like, for instance, throwing, you know, an underground event there is really hard. Finding locations is really hard. Not having them shut down is nearly impossible. So it's a complete uphill battle for any promoter that wants to try to do something. And, you know, also keep in mind that our scene lives within, you know, it's a scene that doesn't necessarily want to be at a big flashy club with, you know, really expensive cocktails that closes early, you know, where we're meant to be in dark warehouses where, you know, it's open until 7 o'clock in the morning and the sound is obnoxiously loud, you know, so you better cover your ears because otherwise you're going to hear it.
Right. We're very fortunate here in LA to be able to have, you know, those opportunities for sure.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, and that's the flip side of it is LA's scene is actually really, really flourishing, and the city does allow the scene to breathe. There are some really key promoters here that are really, really amazing people. you know, that have been doing some really wonderful things. And they take great pride and responsibility in throwing events that are done properly. They pay attention to safety. They pay attention to what's really important.
Security.
Mm-hmm. And then the music and the sound. Yeah, and that's amazing mm-hmm. to see, and that's how it's supposed to be. You know, it's like you give people the responsibility to be able to do something special, and here it is. You know, so honestly, I gotta say, I think in the U.S., I mean, I would argue that we have one of the best underground music scenes there are. So, I think, yeah, we're very lucky here. So, yeah. And then as far as your other questions about switching over from DJing to playing live. So when I was in Chicago, I was in a duo named Mia Wallace, which I'm still part of. Right now, we've been a bit on hold, but my partner and I, you know, that's made a lot of music, put out a lot of music and played out a lot. And we would do kind of like a DJ hybrid set, which was a mixture of DJing and performing live, kind of just improvising all those things. And then when I came here, due to kind of having to take a year off from music and really taking a big break, that allowed me to do quite a few different things that I think were really helpful for me. One is having a timeout. So, you know, you're in this machine, you're doing all the things that you do every day, you're in these processes, you have these deadlines and these expectations and all this stuff is going. Then when you get to take a break and then you're like, okay, now I got to get back into this thing, which you're obviously so passionate about and there's no other way that you're not going to be part of it. You have this freedom to kind of reapproach it in a different way and take the time to be like, you know what, now that there's no rush and all these, there's not these gigs waiting for us and I don't have to do it like this or like that. What are some maybe choices that I can make in different ways? And that led me down a path of focusing a lot more on live performance. During this time, you know, I started getting deeper into Eurorack because I wasn't really making music to put out, but I would get to kind of dabble at home a little bit. So I had some more time to learn and some more freedom to be part of that. And so the mixture of getting deeper into modular and then just having this freedom to kind of make brand new decisions on how I want to present my music, how do I want to present my performances, starting a record label and all these things kind of came up as a flower of having this extra time and focus and ability to kind of do that. So
that's great that you like, I think a lot of people took the opportunity to find either a new hobbies or flourish in other ways that like how you were mentioning. And with that, were you streaming at all, or did you take advantage of any of the streaming, or did you more so just, or was it a little of that, or did you also just mainly just focus in on like building that wall of modular that you have in your studio?
Yeah. I did do a couple streams. I did one for 6 a.m. and then I did a couple other ones, really small ones that were I was asked or invited to do. But there was really just a few of them. And then besides that, no, I didn't really do much more because unfortunately my studio, and you can see now I'm actually at my home here, and the reason I'm here is because my studio unfortunately has really bad internet. I've always wanted to start streaming my sessions there more because, you know, I spend so much time in the studio all day, and I think, you know, it doesn't cost me anything to turn cameras on and, you know, let people peep in. And if they feel like, you know, watching me do nothing for 30 minutes or then hear, you know, blasting loops for 8 hours at the same time, like that's fine. But unfortunately with my internet capabilities there, it's just impossible. So that's kind of where I'm at. But I did record you can call it a stream, but it really was a stream. It was pre-recorded, but I did record a big performance that I did, which was kind of like my big official first Eurorack performance. It's called Metanoia, which was put out by Mixmag.
I saw that. It was great.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. It was fantastic. For those of you, definitely go and check that out. It was on Mixmag, correct?
Yeah. You can find it on their YouTube or on my socials as well.
And just do you want to mention your socials really quick since you?
Yeah, sure. My just regular Instagram is David Castellani Music. So that's DavidCastellani Music. And then my modular company is called Anti-Culture Modular. Anti-Culture Modular. And it's ANTI_KULTURE. So culture with a K _modular. So anti_culture_modular. Cool. And those Instagram's kind of the main place we're pushing. You can also find us on YouTube too, which is at anti-culture.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about your module company. I mean, that was obviously birthed as well from your journey through modular and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So this has been, it's been 2 years in the making, and actually a little bit more than 2 years now. I'd say almost reaching 2.5, geez. You know, it was something that was really never like, I was never like, oh, I want to start a modular company, you know, or like, I want to start an instrument company. I always just was passionate about using all these instruments and really fell in love with the process of exploring how different instruments work and all the different sweet spots that things have. You know, you don't need any really thing, any like fancy gear to make music. You can, so many people do such amazing art just in the box. For me, what I love about different instruments is the ability of learning where the sweet spots are, meaning that certain synths are really good at, certain instruments are really good at doing something. And then that thing that they do it in this most beautiful and eloquent and easily, you know, effortlessly, they just kind of do that. Then maybe they're really bad at doing everything else, but that one thing they're really good at. And each instrument's kind of quirky and different and has that type of characteristic. So I've always been increasingly interested in trying to figure out what those sweet spots are and understanding what the tools are and what the strengths of the tools are. Because then when it comes to making music, you know, for me, it's always this kind of personal, it's battle with myself and being able to reach a level of quality that I'm happy with and something that I'm inspired by before I get uninspired and I get bored and I get sick of listening to the same thing for too long. And so through this process, I've kind of been, you know, going through all the different options out there and trying everything, you know, different plugins and hardware synths and Eurorack and stuff like that. And through this, I kind of stumbled on this this kind of, I took a few different concepts from two different places and realized that if I put them together, I would have this kind of new different type of sequencer in Eurorack that didn't exist, that I knew to be really, really powerful and really useful. And it was really just the awareness of understanding how impactful this tool is that really pushed me to want to start this project. It was really kind of just out of the necessity of knowing that this tool was strong. So then I partnered up, you know, with some friends that are engineers and you know, different smart people. And I came up with the concept, designed the layout of the module and kind of the functionality. And then with my friends, we brought it to life and developed it and have molded it together into what it is now. And we actually just started taking pre-sales yesterday for it, or 2 days ago. So we're really excited to finally be able to get it out. And we'll start shipping the first units in mid-December.
That's awesome. No, I've had the pleasure to play with it, to use it. And it's been a lot of fun. Like I have it right now, I'm using it with the Domino, but I've used it with the bass voice on the Pulsar 23 before, some other oscillators. But yeah, thank you for allowing me to.
You want
to
see it?
Yes. Awesome.
There it is. No, it's glory.
Yeah. Yep.
And we've been working really hard on it, you know, and we're really happy. I'm lucky that, you know, my partners are also really strong engineers and really, really smart people. And we've really just managed to get a product together that is really sturdy and really strong and has a really great idea. And I'm super excited to see what people do with it.
It definitely plays into that, the desire to have that tactile feel and approach to making music. Like it really serves that for me. That's like the immediacy of being able to change my pattern. Oh, if you want to chain some things together or switch it up, which is for me one of the main reasons why I got into using hardware and modular in the first place, is just being connected with making music. Do you, like, with your switch to, I mean, I know you kind of went over what your modular case and hardware and things like that, but what was the push between transitioning out of the hardware, the hybrid DJ little bit of hardware scenario to now like full force? I mean, I know, what was the feeling like behind that? Yeah. I know you talked about the pandemic doing it, but what was,
Yeah. So I think it goes back to kind of that same concept I was expressing before about how things have kind of sweet spots, and like certain instruments will allow you to get to certain places and have certain musical experiences that are unique to those instruments. And one thing that when I started playing with Eurorack that really, really took me away was there's actually a few things. One is you completely remove a screen. Okay. So a lot of times, even if you're, and of course, it depends on, you know, what kind of setup you have. But generally speaking, even if I have like a little synth and I'm plugging it in to record it, I have one eye on the synth and one eye on the computer, you know, and I'm kind of still like managing those two things. And your visual sense being so enriching and having so much to offer your brain in understanding and perception, it kind of, it takes up a lot of that like mental space, you know. When you remove that screen and you're just like looking at a few things and you're just making these very simple choices of patching in a few cables, you start using a different part of your brain. I think it's very similar to like playing an acoustic instrument, where you're really just kind of, it simplifies the process and enriches the like auditory experience. On top of that, you know, when you have like, you know, a synth, you know, let's take any you know, popular synthesizer that's, you know, with a keyboard that, you know, there's thousands of them. All great, great instruments, you know, well, a lot of them are great instruments. And these instruments, you know, there's teams of people from 5, 20, 100 people that spend months and years even like trying to figure out, okay, well, what is the key bet going to be like? What are the oscillators going to be like? What is the modulation going to be like? What are the knobs going to be like? What is the box going to look like? So there's all these thousands of different choices and creative ideas and all these things that need to be decided on before you have this product. And, that's a lot of work, and there's a lot of brain power going in a lot of different directions. In your rack, you might have like, you know, one person that makes a filter with one knob on it, and they'll spend 6 months just making that one knob, you know? So the, you know, so the heart and like the artisanal expressiveness and the craftsmanship and the dedication to the quality and to the experience is so more fine-tuned and so more focused that I feel like, generally speaking, in Eurorack, you have these components that are built really, really well and do things in amazing results just right out of the box, you know? And so for one, that's something that's really important to me. And lastly, I would also say is that at the same time, a lot of these modules also push boundaries in weird ways. They allow you to do things in different ways by not being normalized through a certain patch or by having some weird, you know, we're talking about noise engineering, you know, they have like knobs like bash and smash, you know, and you're like, you don't not even really know exactly what's going on back there, but you know it's fun when you turn the knob. So that creative expression, and then the fact that each mostly, you know, each parameter has an input jack for you to be controlling it by external CV. And what happens for me, it's kind of, I use this analogy a lot. It's kind of like riding a horse. It's like you're on a horse and yes, you're kind of in control of the horse and you're hoping to guide the horse and, you know, go this way or that way. But the horse, it's also its own being and it also makes its own decisions and it has its own agenda and you have to work together. And when you work together, you both are in control of the experience. And sometimes you end up in these places that are magical that you didn't really know you were going to end up. And so for it's kind of how it is. It's like, I know, like if I'm going to start patching something, it's not even because I'm excited about like this thing, I want this thing to happen. No, it's like, I know that if I just keep following this road, I'm going to end up in this amazing place that is going to blow my mind. And I can't wait to see what that is.
And you have no idea. Exactly. You don't know where it's going to. It's funny you use the horse analogy because I have thought about that too. And I very much feel the same way where it's like, all right, like you have control, but you don't at the same time, which is kind of liberating in itself.
Oh my God, I love it. It like does it for you, you know? It's like more, nowadays I kind of actually feel like I'm more of a spectator. Like it's the modules that are making the music. I'm just
kind of there tweaking the knobs.
Turning it on and putting the gas in, you know? And like pressing the button and then it does it. Like as much as that may seem on the outside for people that don't use Eurorack that it's like this big complicated thing. But to be honest with you, I think like once you wrap your head around how these general things work, it does the work for you, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, so leading into my next question, as we are approaching, you know, the top of the hour here, what advice would you give to somebody who's like, maybe they are on that verge of like, they're on that jumping off point. Maybe they've been dabbling a little bit with some hardware, maybe a synth or two or what have you, but their desire is to have an opportunity to play out live. You know, what advice would you give, and what direction do you think you direct other direction in terms of gear or what have you would you offer to somebody like that?
This is a hard question. There's a lot to offer there. And I think that, you know, everyone can do it in different ways. And I know we don't have like, you know, cause I could talk for 4 hours about this probably, but since we have only a couple minutes here, I would say one thing is try not to overload yourself. So try not to make it so that you lose track of all the things that need to get done. Find ways to simplify your decision choices that you have in front of you for be able to manipulate and offer an experience that is full, and making sure it's checking all the tick marks that need to be checked when making music. And I gotta say, this is actually also really important. It's important to understand how music works, what music structure is, and how to make a song before you can reproduce it on the spot live, and then on top of it, perform it. And that's really important. I think that like jumping from like, you know, if you've been a DJ mainly and you want to start playing live, you should start making music as well, like in Ableton or in a DAW, because it's important for you to understand the structural setup of how music works and how it's supposed to evolve and change and what are all the parts. If you don't have that foundation, then performing live in a way that's going to be, you know, as impactful as you want it to be for an audience or even for yourself, I think it's really hard to obtain. Yeah,
that's good advice.
And then after that, simplify, you know, make things simple for yourself so that you can offer that and fit within those boundaries that you know.
That's great. That's great advice. So with that, then with in terms of you mentioned structure and knowing how to have those dynamics in your music, do you feel that since you've started playing live versus working in the box, and when we say box for the like a DAW or what have you, has that changed at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually now treat my Ableton kind of like I treat my modulars rig at the same time, meaning that I used to do a lot of nitpicking, a lot of writing MIDI, a lot of copying and pasting audio stuff. Now it's really just like 3 or 4 sound sources, make sure that those sounds are the right choices and they sound great, and then let them rage through some sort of sequencer that's pushing it. And then from there, you have the ability to kind of go back and nitpick it. And I do the same thing with MIDI, is I'll go ahead and I'll have MIDI sequencers, Max 5 MIDI sequencers that I use quite a bit, and I'll just let those run live in my sessions. And then that's it. And then I'll just like turn them on and off and kind of manipulate the same way I would with a Eurorack sequencer.
Nice. And so one last question. I know, talk about Noetic.
Noetic is my record label. It was launched a year and 3 months now, or 4 months almost. It's been, you know, a passion project. I think every producer, you know, gets that bug inside of them at some point that they want to be able to have a label. And it's something that I started as a vehicle to be able to push out original music. And now I'm interested in starting to start releasing other artists as well. And I've been really, really blessed because I've been able to bring on board amazing remixers and work with people like ETAP Kyle and Voisky and Redshape, Matrix Man. I just had DJ Hyperactive did a remix for me. It's really great. So please check it out. It's called Noetic, Noetic, and you can find us on Beatport or any of the major outlets.
Cool. Thank you so much, David, for being here. I really appreciate it. Thank you to my listeners out there. Again, you're listening to Transduction Signal on DubLab Radio. I am your host, Travarsi. And until next time, keep making music, stay creative.
Thank you.
Thanks.